Bonjour.
Hey Emmanuel, how are you?
Hello. Good. Finishing up a few things before Christmas. How are things on your side?
Yeah, quite good, quite good. Spent as I wrote to you a few, what now, 2 to 3 weeks ago. Spent the last 2 to 3 months exploring some new business ideas. So quite good, but busy.
That's the funny thing, right? Like founder as a founder, you can never stop.
Yeah, but I think it's also important to take the time and to really think about a topic quite deeply to really understand what you can do or not do, because sometimes you have some good ideas, but when you spend a few weeks thinking about them, you are like, well, yeah, maybe not. So it's nice also to have a little bit of time to decide what
Yeah,
to do.
100%. But it's just so funny that like so many founders I've spoken to have been like for the better half of a decade in like 7, 8, 10 years, and startup goes either like 10 million plus like in the bank or zero in the bank. Doesn't really matter. It's like is like gonna go chill out for 2 years. Like no, like I have like three ideas, like which I build one in 2023.
Yeah, but it's always good to have people like that, I think, in the society.
But needs to, otherwise we stagnate and it's like starts.
Yeah, clearly. So look, again, thanks again for taking the time for me today. I'm not going to use the usual script I'm using with other people because you have a quite unique point of view, I think, in this industry. You are collaborating with a lot of SaaS companies. And so I think it might be valuable to maybe have more open discussion
Yeah, sure.
regarding your opinion and also what you see with companies with whom you are working. So maybe in order to start, what are the typical type of companies with whom you are working? Do you have like a very specific segment in mind, or do you see a lot of different sizes and a lot of different scales?
Yeah, I'd say like we focus really like 100% B2B, like 95% startup, software as a service, like 85% now, like will be more next year, and like 0 to 20 million annual recurring revenue. So it's not really like the ETH postdoc that thinks about maybe incorporating a company or not, but it's also not the Personio, LeanIX, of this world. There's some edge cases probably in terms of revenue, like the beekeepers of this world, which are, yeah, typically we say like pre-C to Series B in terms
Okay,
of
makes
stage.
sense. And it's mostly sales-led, or you are also working with other companies using other types of go-to-market motions?
It's really sales-led, like companies
Okay.
called Sales Playbook, I guess.
Yes.
So our customers typically sell 5 to 6 figure deals. One of them, two of them closed 6, 7 figure deals now already. So it's really this like explanation heavy, like consultative challenger solution selling approach. No, nobody wakes up, logs in and says like, oh, let me wire you $50,000.
Clearly. Makes sense. And so for these kind of companies, what kind of CRM they are you typically using?
I'd say like 9% of them obviously split of like HubSpot, Salesforce, maybe 80%, and then it's like 15% Pipedrive, and the rest is Soho, Close, and something weird maybe like some of them use like Freshworks or like
But
Microdynamics.
the
But
big one are usually clearly Salesforce.
it's like 80%, like it's probably like 50% HubSpot, 40% Salesforce, 5% Pipedrive, 5% rest, and we
And
see like
usually, no,
yeah,
go
we
ahead,
see like
sorry.
that the startups are more like in the HubSpot camp and up on like scale up stage, like let's say 2, 5 million ARR. Like at one point you need Salesforce if you like.
And usually they already have a CRM in place when they start to work with you, or it's something sometimes where you provide advice and you help them to do this kind of setup.
Both most of them have installed one and are using it for good or bad. Some of them also say like, look, we have a license, we connected them the email inbox, but not even the calendar. And honestly, we never properly implemented conversions and sales funnels and reporting and what have you not. Target accounts for sure not.
Makes sense. And you said some of them are at some point making the transition between HubSpot and Salesforce. Usually, in your opinion, what are the main reasons behind this transition? What is like really lacking in HubSpot? And that makes basically companies doing this kind of transition that is quite time consuming and also quite
Yeah,
expensive. So
100%. So we're not like a classic like CRM consultancy like Salesforce for Salesforce or so, or be inbound or be digital nowadays for HubSpot marketing hub and so on. So I think that the transition is really that in complexity at one point. Like that you're like, you have different territory management, you have like multi-account levels, right? Which to a certain degree you can do in HubSpot. But at one point this is like custom workflows, integration with like billing, revenue recognition, asset management, these sort of things, like multi-year deals, how do you do revenue recognition, all these things.
Okay, but usually they keep HubSpot for the marketing, I guess.
There's also a lot of them who have both in place, like, and so like HubSpot is like marketing and everything inbound and like messaging and like campaigns and so on, and then HubSpot integrates with Salesforce for good and bad. Depends on like how it's not a technical thing, it's just how you think marketing, sales, handover.
Makes sense.
Yeah.
And so usually what kind of mistakes or issues do you see in the way CRMs are being used or set up by B2B SaaS companies?
I think the biggest challenge is just like buying features. Like, it needs to have everything and you don't really know like the business outcomes that you want. And I think it's also either you're not using certain things like the calling feature, like that every CRM has, right? That you can lock calls, and that if you and I actually talk for 3 times on the phone, like ideally that is in a CRM, that last activity is today, and that is locked that we have today, because otherwise, like, you just run the risk that somebody else calls and things like, oh, it's, hey, 1 year we haven't spoken. It's like, I was on the phone with Rafael yesterday. That's bad. And the other thing is just over implementation and over worrying of like having 14 stages in a CRM and worrying about the lead scoring from market qualified lead to sales qualified lead. And it's just like, hey, mate, you got a phone number of that person? It's like, yeah. It's like, call.
Yeah. You know, sometimes it's easier to hide behind the CRM. You don't want to speak to the customer.
We have even one of our like top sales headhunting partners said like once, I was actually like doing a CRM evaluation for his former company. Right, but he was chief sales officer, and he said, like, look, often like the best CRM users are the most non-productive sales reps in terms of revenue.
Yeah, sure, because they spend too much time inputting data. Yeah, so you need to find a balance, definitely.
Yeah.
Yeah. But so in your opinion, like for a B2B SaaS company, what would be like the most important feature you will be looking at a CRM, or like, why people are using HubSpot versus, I don't know, like Close or Pipedrive? What are the main triggers?
I think the most important fundamental thing is really a single source of truth. That like, if I'm on vacation, somebody takes over an account from me. Let's say I worked with Beekeeper for a bit. And somebody new can come in and it's like, I'm on vacation, I'm sick, I don't have time. And that person gets a call from Beekeeper and is like, hey, what up? We apparently work together. That person finds out like, what we did together, like what, who do we know, like what did we do, like what are the commercials, is the collaboration ending, yes, no customer success topic, what notes have we done internally, like who's involved where. So that's one. The other thing is obviously like steering your sales and marketing, that you understand like your sales pipeline, you understand like which offering made how much revenue, are you on track, are you not, how does your pipeline look like. And then there's other things such as just having like one strategy as a company, right? That you say like, this is a target account, this is not, right? Like with so many of these 500 target accounts, we have open deals, but that's more advanced than.
Yeah, makes sense.
And then how you do the task management, that's a bit up to companies, but I mean, it works in CRM, like Salesforce, HubSpot, they have like a chat feature, which can like, hey, they're off a dead deal. I just spoke to person XYZ. I've seen this news release, like maybe call tomorrow to ask about X.
Yeah, makes sense. I think two things you mentioned are a good transition and a good connection to what I'm trying to explore, because you said it's important for the CRM to be the point of truth, which I fully agree. And at Best Mile, at least in my experience, it was, again, pretty okay or easy to use the CRM as the point of truth regarding the acquisition of net new customers. But everything that was done after the initial acquisition was almost impossible to do in the CRM, or it was very difficult to still use the CRM as a real point of truth post-closing, because the CRM was basically not designed to do that. Most of the CRMs have this classical sales and marketing funnel, but everything that comes after doesn't really exist in the CRM.
No, and I think we touch upon like a weak spot in the whole sales tech market called customer success and customer lifecycle management. So I think a while ago, like when I was still implementing Salesforce, like it was this huge boom of contract lifecycle management. Like what do you do from a contract draft, like from the offer, and then you have the red line.
Yeah, Salesforce has a product for that, CPQ, and now it's more and more evolved.
By now, like I was doing that 2015, so they actually bought like a few like companies on that and so on. Yes. But that was a huge hype, and now like customer lifecycle management, not customer relationship management, but really like what happens to be really SaaS ready. I mean, you either go to something like a subscription platform like Zuora, which is not the most, I mean, it's pretty enterprisey.
Yeah, and it's more for finance more than and sales.
Yeah, exactly. And then you have the whole Vitally, Gainsight, Planet, Churn Zero, like all these custom success softwares. But I mean, we evaluated it, we implemented Vitally, like failed. I mean, it was like too much of a hassle to duplicate data from like our CRM. And then like Planhead is pretty enterprise, again, like this as well. So what do you do as like a 1 to 20 million ARR startup? Honestly, in our case, like we added a few crucial fields, like date, start date, end date of a collaboration. We already had like workflows to have like reminders before like a collaboration expires.
Yes.
Have you captured testimonial? Have you captured referral? What's a net promoter score? What's the churn risk? What's the probability?
Mm-hmm.
It's pretty pragmatic that you get like, even in us, like, I mean, we're technically a boutique business, a sales playbook.
Yeah, for you, I think.
But even there, like think in terms of like MRR, like monthly recurring revenue of number of active customers by cohort, what they're buying, like what the MPS is, and just like putting it on top of the CRM. Because we did a lot of research so far, haven't found like a satisfying customer success solution.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I tend to agree with that. But you know, if we step back a little bit, we need to remember that Salesforce was designed like 20 years ago, HubSpot basically 15 years ago, at a time where subscriptions were not the main type of revenue companies were generating. At this time, companies were still doing like one-time transactions, either a perpetual software license or a physical product, but the CRMs were designed to support this one-time transaction type of thing. And the way the opportunity or deal object is built in a CRM with all the stages, finishing with closed one,
yeah,
it works quite well for this one-time transaction because you just follow the funnel, and when you are at closed one, it's the end. And you can almost archive and forget. But when you sell a subscription, as you know it very well, closed one is not the end. It's only the beginning of something else.
And
this something else is much harder to track in the CRM. And I believe, as you said, Zora, ChargeBee, and others, they understood
beast on, like the ChargeBee's pedals and so on like the
but billing. You know, I think they made a good hypothesis 5-10 years ago. They understood that CRMs were not designed to really be the source of truth regarding subscriptions. And so they designed this kind of third-party tools or add-on that could work in addition of the CRM. But as soon as you do that, it's a little bit like opening the Pandora box, because when you have your CRM, you have your subscription management tool, and your data is already divided, and none of this tool is on itself a real point of truth. And very quickly, companies don't have only two tools. They might have 3, 4, 5. And at some point, none of these tools are source of truth.
So some of them get like an email sequence or like a sales engagement platform like Salesloft. Then they get like MailChimp for newsletters. Then they get HubSpot for marketing automation. They get Salesforce for a CRM. They get
Even worse, you mentioned Zoha, but Zoha, it seems, has a very, very, very bad CPQ module. So most of the companies using Zoha don't allow their sales team to use the CPQ of Zoha. So they even implement a third-party CPQ that is in between the CRM and the subscription. So yeah, you have so much data segregation and deduplication that it becomes quite hard to make sense of the data.
It is very messy. I mean, even like as a Swiss company, right? Like when you send an offer and you want to have like 7.7% VAT on it, what do you typically do? Like you drive the deal like in a CRM and then you jump over to Bexy or something equivalent and send out an offer that's directly like then going into your accounts receivables and so on. So that's another split. And there's like, actually, like, it's weird that I need to enter like an email address into DocuSign to get it signed and then like add my physical post address of a customer in Bexy or send out an offer and then put the deal to close one once the thing is signed. And
yeah, it's a lot of manual work behind the scene. And I spoke with some companies who are doing all this kind of invoicing and back office work manually. And yeah, they lose a lot of time, efficiency, and sometimes they even forget to send invoices because it's just too much.
It's a small challenge in terms of cash conversion cycle. Like to where we're going, I think like you're doing well if you don't forget to send out invoices.
Exactly. Yeah. And how often do you see companies using this kind of subscription management tool like Zoha, Chargebee, or Paddle? Is it like very common or it's more like exceptions?
I'd say it's an exception until like a certain maturity, of which I would say like 2 to 5 million ARR still works with invoices in the German speaking market. And then upon like 5 million, like it depends on the deal size of somebody.
Sure, if you have a lot of velocity or it's only a few big deals.
Yeah, our customers typically sell like 5-6 figure deals, and that like the subscription management solution like Paddle, Chargebee work like a charm. Like if you can like put a credit card on file and it extracts money on a monthly or annual basis, that just simply doesn't work if you have like a 50K ARR contract.
Yeah, Paddle and Chargebee are a little bit more B2C than B2B or like small ticket B2Bs in my
opinion. You can do go cardless and these things, which is direct debit and SEPA transaction, and it just redirects money from a bank account. But I mean, what I hear from like really the enterprise sales reps also, like this is like, or any sales rep, like, hey, honestly, anything 5 figure, just send an invoice. In Switzerland, in DACH, these things get paid. It's legally fine, like, right? You have like literally the legal obligation for the other side to pay. So that's actually like then a thing for like product-led growth where you literally have a fully automated engine with really low annual contract values. And therefore also you cannot invest in the customer acquisition costs and customer lifecycle management. Then that makes a lot of sense to have something like mixed panel to measure and then something like user lane to product drive, product onboarding, something like Paddle, Chargebee, what have you not, doing the subscription management.
Okay. And so what is like the usual sales stack you recommend to a company? I'm sure it depends on a lot of different things, but like what is the most common type of sales stack you see out there?
Yeah, but what we always recommend to any startup, be it at zero, be it like at 7-8 figure ARRs, like, I mean, get a CRM, which is discussed about last like 50 minutes, and then get something where you can like find and validate, like, so you don't let in spam, like actually, and send emails, be cold emails or be like newsletter to people you already know. Like we recommend a tool called Interseller. It's called Inter, like Stellar, like the movie, but Seller for salesperson. And then get something like for LinkedIn, if you want to run experiments, like not for mass automation, but if you want to reach out to like, let's say chief revenue officers and VP sales in a segment and ask them about how they think about like customer success. You want to understand like which message, where does it resonate better, then get a tool to do like carefully LinkedIn automation.
Yes.
Then you get data, right? And then you can test certain hypotheses and extension work. So that's one. So that's like three tools. And then I would get something like, we use JotForm a lot. You can use Airtable, Typeform as well, to do like pragmatic forms, feedback forms. I mean, I think we closed 100 deals at sales, literally 100 deals at sales playbook, just on an order form and job form.
Yeah, sure. You can go quite far with
Yeah, but even without the legal stuff, right? I mean, we ask people like, do you agree on the terms and conditions? Like press yes. And like, do you need a DocuSign? Like, and we did a LinkedIn poll. Do you want one? It's like, look, 2 out of 3 founders need one. Like, are you fine? And so like, okay. No, I'm not fine. Send me docs. I'm good.
Okay.
So that's like number 4, and then number 5, I'd really get something. That's just really helpful. For your sales reps to understand how they're doing. Like for example, for call recording. Like I mean, we work with Unique. Swiss startup scale up. That you understand your speaking listening ratio. Like if you actually like follow certain like script that you check off the boxes of what you need to get out of a call, that you can get coaching also, that you can send this to your internal coach or trainer. So like, hey, can you give me feedback on my call?
Okay. Yeah. And so what, in HubSpot, what's your recommendation when it comes to managing renewal and upsell? Because when it's a net new deal, classical deal or opportunity, you right. follow the usual funnel. This is, let's say, a no-brainer. But when it comes to renewal and upsell, how do you see companies doing that in HubSpot? Because at least at BestMind, it's where stuff started to become quite messy.
Right. I mean, the technically correct way is like you have a second pipeline. Like you want to have one for new business, one for existing business. Like yes. HubSpot says, but they want a bit more money from you per user per month for that. Mm-hmm. And probably go from like started to professional in HubSpot sales up. Salesforce is similar. Depends a bit on like how you started. Even if you don't have that, like even without, we've just started like $50 a month, nothing huge. Just like have like two pipelines, new existing business. And then even already when you close one deal, I would immediately open like a renewal opportunity just mm-hmm. to make sure you don't forget. And then like if the customer doesn't renew, if you don't continue collaborating, I mean, that's technically closed, lost, right? That's yes. that's like an opportunity like in the sake of the word, like you had a chance to continue working with the customer. Mm-hmm. And sometimes that works and sometimes that doesn't. So then you can filter on like your existing customer pipelines are like, what's our win rate of existing customer business?
Yeah, I think this is fine if you have like, let's say quite long contract, like annual contract. But if your cycle is faster, if like your subscription term is like 1 month, or if it's even like an evergreen type of deal, then it's a little bit more challenging because you are not going to reopen an opportunity each month. You see what I mean?
Yeah, but so this again is then typically like the more product-led growth yes. where you analyze like cohort metrics of who's churning, who completes mm-hmm. like at certain tipping points. I mean, you're speaking to like a sales guy at heart here, and I would say like, hey, close annual contracts because you actually need that journey with a customer and that transformation sure. for the customer to be successful. And you need the commitment from both sides to make the customer successful.
Yeah. It's what we had at BestMind. We had these annual deals or even multi-year. What we had also is that most of the time, even if we had like yearly or multi-year contract, we had to do quite a lot of amendments during the term of the contract. Mm-hmm. It was not only renewal at the end, it was like amendments in the middle, which was also a little bit messy because how do you track this in the CRM? You only put like what the delta of ARR? Do you do prorated value or not? Do you do like a new opportunity that replaces and cancel the other one? Because at some point you have also the risk to double count some value or some revenue. Do you see what I mean?
Yeah, never cancel, never move stuff back in the sales funnel. Never mm-hmm. move from like closed one to like closed losses. So yes. you can avoid it at all costs. I mean, if a customer calls you back, like send you DocuSign today and after Christmas says like, oh, we actually bankrupt, didn't notice. Yeah. I'm not going to pay. Then you need to get that to zero for mm-hmm. revenue recognition purposes. In the other case, I think that there's the terms of like ARR run rate, right? So if you close simple math, like a deal initially for 100K ARR, and then in the best of my case, somebody comes like, hey, we have like one more bus. Like we mm-hmm. did 10 buses, now we have one more bus that we bought. Can we add that? It's like, well, that's another 10K, as we said, like 10K per bus. Then that's like a 10K deal.
Yes.
And like you have legal stuff. And then you somehow, like, I mean, you have reasonable amount of deals, you can still do these manually. And just like on the account level, you have like the ARR run rate, like mm-hmm. VRs maybe, that's like 110K, and you just simply take both fields. I mean, yeah. You can have a formula, but you can also just like round it.
Okay. But then at some point after, I don't know, like 2-3 years of relationship, you might have like 3-5 closed one opportunities for one given customer. And sometimes in the CRM, it's not easy to reconsolidate all this information and to have a real overview of everything that happened in the past and to really know what is active today from a contract point of view. Is it also an issue you see or not really?
Yeah, 100%. I had this conversation with a scale-up CTO, but that's also like leading like new business initiatives, like from business development perspective. It's like, hey, honestly, today we only sell like 5 offers. The CRM, we need to maintain like 89, I think it was. Like, how come? Like, look, now it's 2022. Some fancy sales guys sold like 3-year deals like in 2020 with stuff that we don't have anymore. They gave them special permissions, and by now the product is different. The price and everything is different. So this grandfathering of conditions, like if you close multi-year, which many SaaS companies do and should do, probably.
Yes. Depends, yeah.
Like that's a tricky thing.
Mm-hmm.
The same thing, by the way, happens if you sell to a group, let's call the group UBS, and you have like with UBS subsidiary in Zurich.
You have a lot of subsidiaries. Yeah.
Singapore, and then you have one with the wealth management and one with the investment banking, and then you have one with treasury, and everyone uses your, I don't know, assets under management, insights, reporting for top relationship manager. That is the same thing, that you somehow have an understanding of what your company does with UBS.
Yes, you want maybe to consolidate at the master level on top.
Yeah, and we had this like at a SMI company, large industrial firm, where I had the pain or pleasure to implement company lifecycle management. I asked, how are you doing it today? Like, how do you know if you as a world-leading company are doing business with these other multinational corporate? I was like, honestly, we don't. I mean, everybody has their contracts on like their hard disk somewhere, like locally saved. And if the customer would call, like, hey, GDPR calling, like, give me all the contracts right now, like, it's a mess.
Yeah, it's difficult. Yeah.
We need to call up not 100,000 people, not all employees, but I mean, everybody customer facing, and say, like, do you have any work with that specific customer?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so in HubSpot, when you manage a deal, in the main amount field, what do you usually put? You put the ACV, you put the TCV, you put the ARR value of the contract. And what do you do when a contract has both recurring and non-recurring revenue?
Right. Excellent questions. So two questions in there, right?
Like, yeah, sure.
Put in, and like, then how do you separate subscription and
non-subscription?
So the first one is like, I mean, the separate field by nature in HubSpot, Salesforce, and so on. So that you enter, like, if you have a 3-year deal and you have like 100K ARR, you put like 300K in TCV, total contract, and you put like 100K ARR.
Yes.
That actually correctly populates on your bookings, on your booked revenue, and then your ARR, but that's okay. And you can like configure all these CRMs to do that.
Yes.
For the one time and recurring, the easiest, most pragmatic way is to have like two separate opportunities.
Okay.
It's very simple. Like, you typically then have like if you close like 100K ARR, like 300K TCV, it's not going to be 300K. It's probably going to be 350 or 400 or 500K, because it's going to be between 50 and 200K like implementation.
Mm-hmm.
So if you sell something like Yokoi spend management solution to enterprise, to FIFA, to Stadler, whoever, like, you somehow need to integrate with SAP. You need to like do like the legal and compliance stuff. You need to the process integration workshops, all this stuff.
Mm-hmm.
It's not like a go live. It's like an implementation project.
Yes. But so you divide it. What's the main reason of splitting it? It's because the go live date and the kind of work will be different, or it's more like from a reporting point of view?
Both, like your implementation and rollout transformation, consulting, whatever you do, training, consulting, implementation will be 3 months, 6 months, whatever it is, right? So like the collaboration duration is different.
Yes.
If a customer in 1 year asks like, hey, can you come by and train a few of our people? You need to be able to say like, this period stopped like 6 months ago. This is a new training, whatever budget.
Mm-hmm.
And you just want to be really quick to say like, how much of our business is actually annual recurring revenue and how much is not.
Yes. Yeah. But then depending how you do reporting and analysis, you might also do a little bit of double counting. If I ask you like, how many deals did you win last quarter, then you need to keep in mind that some of these opportunities might be, you might have two opportunities in the CRM, but it's in reality the same deal and the same customer.
Yeah, for sure. But that's not that's not so tricky. Like on the number of active customers, the numbers of customers won, the new logo, like the new logo churn and so on, this will still be the same metrics.
Yes.
So, I mean, if it makes life easier for your sales operations person, you could even like for a 3-year deal, like have a 2022, a 2023 and a 2024 opt-in, close them. So that, because otherwise, what do you do? Like if it's annual payment, then again, you have one deal closed for 3 years. You cannot bill annually. Then you put it like to invoice. Yes, it was status invoice, pick list field. And then you go again like, oh, it's only a fair, but please keep in mind that in 1 year, you'd actually need to ask like if it's fine to send another. And in 2 years, make yourself a reminder and I put you a Salesforce task. Like, what the fuck?
But this is also because CRMs, at least current CRMs, are not really designed to keep in mind all this billing and invoicing information.
No, it was a huge, like we did quote to cash, like at 700 person company, but largely complex. I mean, they're like 80% was custom in Salesforce. There was 20% of Salesforce left and like 100 custom objects. I kid you not. And the company was coming in on quote to cash and it's like, yeah, it's very easy. Like we just use all the standard. I was like, look, 80% cost means there's 20% Salesforce left. We have like another object for context. We have person context and company context. And I mean, it blew, right? I mean, it's like I flew to London personally for at least 2 days, 3 days of workshopping on revenue recognition, what you do if like the revenue goes across the year and if different subsidiaries have different fiscal yes. years. And you run into all this stuff, which like begs you is like not enterprise enough, but you run.
It's too simple.
You run into this whole abacus things of like revenue, accrual account management, and so on and so forth.
But so if today someone using HubSpot wants to put in place like a beginning of quote to cash process, how do they do it? Because again, HubSpot is tracking opportunities. Opportunities can reach a closed one deal, but it's not like a real quote to cash. Far from it. So how do you do it?
Hey, switch to Salesforce because Salesforce tell them we enterprise ready. And buy another quote to cash module, pay a bunch of consultants like a 5 or 6 figure amount, get really frustrated that it still doesn't work and there's a lot of manual work and is error prone. And talk to you on what you're building next because they want to buy it.
Yeah, it's again, yeah. And maybe last very general question, why, in your opinion, CRMs are so bad at post-closing activities like customer success? Because HubSpot has this service hub, but it's like almost a simple ticketing.
Nobody uses service hub, I think.
Exactly. Like it's a super, super weak. So why is it not something they are trying to develop? Because as we know, for a SaaS company, most of the value is created post-closing. You need to have a long lifetime value in order to make money. And so the game is not just closing new deals. It's also keeping customers. And it seems CRMs are not really helping you to keep customers.
Yeah, the CRMs don't even help you win customers, right? When do you ever get like a closing advice or like creative sales firing or like telling you if that's an ideal customer profile or not, or like a CRM helping you to like get new leads or anything actually useful. I mean, CRM is like an enterprise resource planning system, like SAP ERP, right? It's like it's a hull, right? It's a workflow engine technically. It's like it's a relational database, like very simply put, that saves like a ton of data, hopefully, if you add it and the data quality is good, which it really is. And it doesn't help you function that much, honestly.
It's a little bit sad. Looking at the price of such a tool.
It is very sad. And I've been to SaaStock as like the number two SaaS conference in Europe, behind SaaStock probably. And everybody was selling like an analytics solution on top of your lead scoring solution, on top of Salesloft, which is on top of your CRM, which is on top of data entry, so that you understand what's going on. And I was like, guys, is actually anybody helping you to close more bigger deals faster here? Mm-hmm. Like, no.
It's
like,
yeah,
what?
Because it's deep. Yeah, it's true. Yeah, it's a bit. Assuming you have different channels and even different go-to-market motions, the CRM should help you to know what is working and what is not working, but it's not really the case. And also because the CRM doesn't have a super good understanding of the real revenue generated by a given customer. Depending how you use it, you might have like beginning ARR, but you might not track the entire subscription lifecycle, so you don't have a good overview of how much revenue was.
I think what's missing, like in especially like mainland Europe, is like a company that really drives like this thought leadership on like customer success, essentially, that is. And like having a pragmatic but working tool on top of your CRM that doesn't deduplicate your data, like that is really lean on doing that without like people investing five figures immediately.
Yes. But then if it's a tool working on top of the CRM, it's a little bit again what ChargeBee.
It should be more like part of a CRM, right? That's the challenge.
Yes, and this is what I'm trying to explore, because if we step back, what I said before, like the CRM was more designed to drive net new acquisition, not the entire life cycle. Some companies tried, like Zoha, ChargeBee, and also some CSM tool, tried to do the second part of the life cycle of the customer and also the subscription life cycle, but then you end up with a lot of different tools and data is deduplicated. So if we want to solve the real problem at the source, what's the strategy? Is it to build again a new type of add-on, but it's not really going to solve the data deduplication? Or is it to build a new type of CRM that is really built to manage the entire life cycle, including the subscription? Because I think the subscription object is deeply linked to the customer. You cannot understand your customer if you don't understand the subscription.
No, you cannot. I 100% agree. Yeah. Well, there's like, there's one CRM solution like out there. It's called Membrane, like out of Nordics, I think Sweden, but nobody knows of them, like in DACH or in the UK. So
Membrane.
Yeah, it doesn't seem to be very good at distribution, at least in DACH. Okay. So they're pretty good at sales enablement, like from zero, like from opportunity to close one, with like giving you something like Medic, or so like you can have your custom playbooks in there, which is good. They also don't solve the customer success challenge. I think the unambitious idea to solve this is to just like, we're gonna basically build something on a Salesforce marketplace, right? Like you can have like install package, and it's just like a bunch of like additional objects, and it's gonna be called like renewal, and it's gonna be called like churn drivers, and whatever. It's gonna be like an install package on a Salesforce marketplace for like $5 per month per user, whatever. And it literally like goes into this like Lightning ecosystem and so on, and people can download and install it. This is what happened in the quote to cash space, and I think it's useful actually. The ambitious way of doing that would actually be like something like that. What Jax, like JAXX .AI, I think, is building for revenue operations, to really say like, we build a tool for the whole life cycle. Mm-hmm. By design, like bow tie model. And the really ambitious one is just like to see like somebody raise a billion, like not going to do this with like a million or 10. And we're going to build like a CRM that's doing like the whole life cycle.
Yeah, the bow tie and the subscription life cycle behind the scene. Yeah.
Basically, Jaco van der Koers from Winning by Design waking up one morning and is like, fuck this, everything's like sad for the reasons we discussed over the last 40 minutes. And I'm going to build like a Winning by Design CRM. And I'm going to like get my head together with somebody from finance who's going to cover the revenue recognition subscription billing part.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But that's an ambitious project. So that's like a 7 to 15 year endeavor.
Yeah, and a quite expensive one, because it's a complex piece of software.
Yeah.
But it's maybe the only strategy that is completely going to solve the underlying pain point. The data model built around subscription, around this bow tie, and where you can really use the CRM, it might not even be called the CRM anymore, but to use this tool as an end-to-end point of truth.
Yeah, otherwise it feels a bit like shared mobility, right? Like you go with like your train from like Zurich to Lausanne, and then you get out and you jump on a bus, and then you need a bike there to wait, and you need all of this stuff to work seamlessly. If the train is late, then your bus went, and then you miss your appointment, whatever. And you actually, the bus also drives certain stages of like the train. Versus that's one approach of having multiple systems, and the other one is like more of like car tuning. Like you buy a VW Golf And you just step by step tune that up to 600 horsepower. So it does 0 to 60 miles per hour in 3 seconds.
But you know, the multiple tool approach is like I talked to Beekeeper, Frontify, Ledgy, and others, so some scale-ups, and they have to do today multi-tool approach because they have no choice.
Yeah, they do. Like,
but then
do you know somebody who integrates HubSpot with Salesforce with SAP? It's painful.
Yeah, and then usually what they need to do on the side to really make sense of the data is to set up a proper data warehouse.
And you buy ClickView or whatever.
Yeah, exactly. Collecting, cleaning, processing, synchronizing data, because just having these multiple tools connected together doesn't work. So you need the proper data infrastructure on the side.
Yeah.
Also
quite and this is why, like, not only sales ops, like sales operations, but RevOps will become more important, because people need to better understand like what's happening in the business, and they don't just out of the CRM.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Maybe last question, because we are arriving at the end. Do you see a lot of companies grouping sales and customer success into some kind of pods or teams, or it's like usually still each department is working on its own with its own tool?
Should we have like out of like the, I think 55 plus active customers right now, and like the 200 plus we worked with over the last 4 years, the really good ones do. Like in sales, like that's common sense, right? Like you have a business development rep and an account executive and tag teams, and they're socially accountable to not deliver crap into the pipeline. Mm-hmm. And
it's easier if you sit next to your friend and you don't deliver crap to him.
Yeah, exactly. And it's emerging in sales and customer success. We see this with a few customers. So one of these customers did, I think, like triple digit, like more than 100% revenue growth, like at the growth stage. So they raised like 10 million round, like already at like 7-figure ARR. They grew more than 100%, mainly by existing customers. Okay. Because today morning I had them in a group coaching call, and one actually said like, hey, I need this economic buyer for XYZ. And the customer success person said like, actually, I spoke to that person, like, let's chat.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that's the way to go.
Yeah, sure. But then we are back to the tooling question. If you want these people to work together, it's easier if they have one.
Yeah,
central platform.
And I think that's more like than a squad approach, right? Like any kind of like a tooling that you have, but socially, like team wise, you have like a squad.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a trend we see, that marketing, sales, customer success, it just becomes more integrated.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, but I think the marketing stack, it's like a monster on its own. It's like HubSpot is doing a very good job, but still, it's. If you build a CRM managing the bow tie, like post-closing, it's going to be super, super tough to also manage marketing properly.
Yeah, I think that I wouldn't put marketing in there in a CRM. So somehow that needs to feed in with paid advertisement and newsletters. Yes. There's also the whole term around dark social and integrating like LinkedIn posts and so on.
Mm-hmm.
Some tools like Surf, formerly was called... something else, which I already forgot now.
So the entry point of this CRM will be what? An MQL or a sales accepted lead or what?
MQL.
MQL is the connection between both.
Yeah. Because anything else is anyways like GDPR-wise not really compliant, right? So somehow I need to reach out to somebody and it's like, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, makes sense.
I mean, technically you can run like small batch, like cold email campaigns, like to 20, 50, 100 people, where you really say like, I have a vested assumption that this is really
I think for B2B it's much easier than B2C. You cannot, but B2B you can. I'm not an expert in GDPR, but at least at BestMile it's a little bit what we were doing, assuming you believe they have an interest, and as long as you use professional emails, it seems to be okay.
100%. And I mean, as long as you're polite, it's just like, hey, look, this company very similar achieved amazing results doing XYZ. I would love to find out if this is possible for you as well. I've never got an angry message on that.
Okay.
Yeah.
Top. Look, Manuel, it was amazing talking to you. A lot of knowledge and a lot of good insights. You are my interview number 76.
That's intense. That's intense. Yeah, congrats to the great mom test research, so to say, on like not pitching your product or your ideas or where you're going, but actually just asking all the questions. So it was fun. Like, I did a podcast episode where I was the host, and this is kind of reverse podcasting. So
cool. Again, thanks a lot. It was amazing. And maybe we will meet over a beer at some point in Zurich.
100%. Thanks so much.
See you soon. Bye, Manuel.